Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Let me give you a quick local college football update before we get to the Chiefs side of things with Jordan Foote. Mizzou went down 21-0 to Texas A&M in the first quarter. Tweet of the day on that so far is from our very own Curtis Siebold. He just tweeted a minute ago. This was the second time in 3 weeks that Missouri gave up 21 points before I got out of bed. Either they got to get better or I got to start getting up earlier. That's a pretty good tweet there for Curtis. Not that I'm surprised. High-quality Twitter follow. That could also be said, will be said, I'll say it, about Jordan Foote of Arrowhead Report and the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at footnoted, F-O-O-T-E-N-O-T-E-D, because that's how his last name is spelled. And then again, you can read all of his work at arrowheadreport.com. Subscribe to Roughing the Kicker wherever you get your podcasts. Jordan, do you have any diagnoses for Missouri at this point, who cannot stop a runny nose and also, unlike the Chiefs, has no offense to speak of?
Josh, I don't know if you and I should be talking about any sort of diagnoses at all. I'm still kind of scarred from your last time that you actually needed one. So I'm trying to stay away from that word as often as I can.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And also, I'm trying to stay away from Mizzou football. So I will just grab the steering wheel and yank away from that because it just seems like a very bad time. I want to run something by you that Blake threw out earlier that I hadn't quite thought of it in this way, but I think it's a good call, and I'm interested how far you'd be willing to take it, I suppose. So Blake made the point that obviously the Chiefs' defense this year has not been good. I don't think Blake was arguing the opposite of that. But he said, you know, some of the defensive struggles of these last couple of years have largely been, you know, febrezed by the offense being as good as it's been. And especially if you go back to 2018, obviously. But for me with this season, the thing that I'm kind of thinking about now is that the defense, while being terrible, has also had times when it's given the ball back to the offense or it's made some key stops, and then the offense failed to capitalize on it. Not even to speak of the times the offense turned the ball over and put the defense in a bad position. If Clyde doesn't fumble, they win the Ravens game. Now we're 3-2 here. If they don't turn the ball over as many times as they do against the Chargers, they're 5-1. If they end up being able to maximize anything offensively against the Bills, the Chiefs' defense against Buffalo gave up 7 points in the second half. It was 14 for the team because there was the pick six. I think they still probably lose against Buffalo unless they have a perfect offensive game because the defense was, again, very ungood. But even as the Chiefs' offense has been successful by lots of metrics, obviously those turnovers have been huge. How do you synthesize all of that? Because I think it's really interesting. I'm not sure there's a clear-cut answer.
I completely agree with everything you said, as pretty much usual. But, you know, it's a result-oriented business, mm-hmm. and the wins and losses are really the only thing that matters at the end of the year. But you know, as people who are watching the game in real time and then either rewatching or rehashing everything throughout the week, the process is way more important than the result right now, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if it's a team that, you know, is competing for a wild card spot. Granted, that might be what the Chiefs are doing, but like heading into the year, you know, a team that hopes to make the playoffs or hopes to do this, hopes to do that, sure, the results are important. For the Chiefs, it was going to take a catastrophe for them to miss the playoffs. I still think that's the case. I still think they're going to make it. People need to stop, you know, worrying about, oh, they're 2-3. Oh, they were 1-2. Oh, they're this. Until the Chiefs are mathematically out of the playoff picture, I'm really not too caught up in the wins and losses. Is it unfortunate? Yes. But you mentioned the defense, and that's case in point. You know, the process is more important than the result. Everyone saw, you know, the defense gave up 38 points to the Bills. Dan Sorensen had blown coverages, Tyrann Mathieu throwing his hands up in the air, all that stuff. But they also forgot, like you mentioned, 7 points allowed in the second half. You know, they came out of halftime, clearly made some adjustments for forcing the Bills to really work for what they were getting offensively. Then the offense just couldn't capitalize. And, like, the offense was shooting itself in the foot, couldn't get out of its own way. That's been the case several times this season. And you bring up, you know, one play changes the Ravens game. A few plays changed the Chargers game. Like, the Chiefs were moving the ball at will early in that contest. They just were turning the ball over. They could have been up, you know, 14-0 in that one. Hindsight is obviously 20/20, but the Chiefs right now need to improve their process, and it's going to show in the results. Like, they're too good for that to not happen. They are so good that despite some of the worst processes in the NFL with any team and any group of talented players, they're 2-3 and have been in pretty much every single game except that Buffalo game that really, if they wouldn't have shot themselves in the foot on offense, they might have been somewhat in. So I agree with that. I think that there's room for improvement, and until they're like 2-6 or 3-6 or something like that, if they're multiple games under 500, then it's a different conversation. But right now, through five games, I think it's emotions are high, people are upset, they're disappointed. The Chiefs should be, you know, 5-1, 4-2, because they're one of the best teams in the league. But the process there, so much more important to look at, I think.
With that all being said about, you know, you're not panicking on the record right now and everything, does it make it easier to swallow or harder to that the margins have been as narrow as they have been? Do you feel better because you think that they're not as far away as it may have looked from being back to being a legit Super Bowl contender? Or is it more frustrating to you because it shouldn't have been? Maybe the exception of the Bills game, these are not games where they were outclassed, you know, which is also frustrating in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's both. And I think it's also, you know, a reality check that there aren't going to be NFL teams that dominate for decades upon end. Like, even the Patriots dynasty had years where they weren't perfect and didn't make it to the Super Bowl. So
they had, like, it was like 10 years between wins at one point. People forget that.
It's something where I've always said this, and I don't really have the data to back it up. I don't have, like, a recollection of every playoff game ever. Weird stuff happens in the playoffs. Like, you can be the top dog, the odds-on favorite. You can get into the playoffs. You can get second-rounded by somebody. Someone can get injured. You can lose. Like, there is a ton of value, and it's different than the Alex Smith days, because in the Alex Smith days, the Chiefs would have to get into the playoffs, have a great supporting cast, have a great defense, and have some weird stuff happen in order to advance deep in the playoffs. Now with Patrick Mahomes, they just have to get in, have some weird stuff happen maybe, and have Mahomes be on. And, like, people forget, even the year they won the Super Bowl, they were down in those games. Like, there were some crazy comebacks. The Chiefs have never been – they haven't earned the Chiefs are going to dominate the NFL. They're going to sleepwalk to 20-0. They're going to do all that stuff. There was always going to be some sort of adversity. There was never a guarantee that they were going to dominate the AFC. Buffalo's gotten better. Cleveland, the jury's still a little bit out. The Chargers have gotten better. The Ravens have gotten better. Like, it's not a guarantee. And people have been talking about regular season this, regular season that. As long as you can get into the playoffs and have five of the however many best players on the field, and the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, Tyrann Mathieu, they have good players, it's going to pay off. So, yes, they are close, and there's definitely comfort in knowing that, because if they can clean up some things and the defense regresses to the mean a little bit, the offense stops shooting itself in the foot, that's good. But also, you know, they were never guaranteed to cakewalk, have a cakewalk of the schedule, have a cakewalk of the season.
Blake, I have a question for you really quick. Did you have a minor heart attack whenever Jordan said the word shooting the way that he just did there? Did that catch your ear?
Yeah, it did. I was about to hit the button.
Yeah, me too.
But I knew Jordan's a professional.
Same. But I thought maybe he just slipped up, because I got to say, Jordan, you said they got to stop. I was I was afraid you were saying something that was very similar to, as long as they stop shooting themselves. But then you said, in the foot. And at that point, the other word wouldn't have made sense
if
there.
If you would have said, it also wouldn't have made sense for you to say shooting themselves in the pants.
Right.
Shooting
if they
pants.
Stop shooting their pants, is what it sounded like. Yeah, if they just stop shooting their pants, I mean, they'll be fine. I just had, like, a moment. My heart skipped a beat. Not literally, it's fine. I'm okay. No more diagnoses. It was very jarring for a minute. But again, Jordan's a professional. What if you had to pick one thing right now? Because I want to get into. I think I know. I don't know. Maybe I don't. There are a bunch of things I want to talk about ahead of this game. But if I asked you to pick one thing, because it sounds like you've got a pretty optimistic outlook, which I think is totally reasonable. What is the thing that stands out to you at this point as something that you are legitimately worried about that you do not think necessarily, you know, stops being a problem with just a little positive regression?
Something that isn't going to stop being a problem. I think the linebacking unit, really the defense in general, it's when I say improvement, and a lot of people think that improvement means like from worst in the NFL all time to like 15th in the NFL. I really, really, really would be floored if that happened. I think improvement for the Chiefs defense will be going from one of the worst units of all time to being like still a clear lower third defense. But if that means like 24th, if that means 25th, if that means 23rd, then the Chiefs are kind of cooking with fire there. They can do some damage with a defense that's just bad instead of extremely bad because, you know, DVOA is cool and the Chiefs have been middle of the pack for the past few years. They just, until Willie Gay can play all three downs and really cover up for their lack of athleticism at linebacker until Juan Thornhill gets his feet back under him and whatever's going on there, that happens. Until Jaron Reed steps up, you know, the defense is limited, and that's going to be the case all year. The Chiefs haven't had Frank Clark and Chris Jones play in the same game. Like, there are clear paths to improvement, but I am a little bit worried that the improvement might not be enough in the event. Now, if the Chiefs' offense is rolling and playing perfect football, it wouldn't matter. But if the offense has, you know, an off quarter or whatever in a playoff game, and the defense is bad, then it's going to be interesting and it's going to be a challenge.
You wrote this week on Arrowhead Report about a few things the Chiefs can do defensively to, you know, stop the bleeding, start bailing out some of the water, whatever analogy you want to use. You mentioned Juan Thornhill just there getting his feet under him. You think it's time for them to start Juan Thornhill. There's been a decent amount of hashtag rumbling to that may actually happen on Sunday. How do you feel about that, and what is your expectation? What's your hope?
I was willing to not defend Dan Sorensen, but rationalize that, you know, Thornhill didn't have what they wanted. He wasn't making tackles correctly. He wasn't playing well in the run game. Like, there were reasons, legitimate, serious reasons, the Chiefs weren't playing him. And then Dan Sorensen promptly went out and played one of the worst games I've ever seen. So even me, who was like 5% in the camp of, okay, I kind of understand why they're doing it. Yeah. It all went out the window. Like, there's no reason for them to trot Sorensen back out there. It's honestly at the point where five games into the season, I have faith in Patrick Mahomes playing better and Tyreek Hill playing better, stuff like that. Dan Sorensen just is what he is. And right now, he probably has lost another step athletically when he wasn't very gifted to begin with. The being too smart isn't there. Like, he just isn't a good player or even an average one at this point. So as a third safety, can he improve? Maybe. Should Armani Watts maybe be getting some reps too? Who knows? But Thornhill is a step in the right direction. The only way to get him, quote-unquote, back, he can declare that he's back in practice. He can declare it at training camp. He can have a big preseason game and say, hey, I'm back. But until he gets out on the field in the regular season, dominates snaps at safety, plays well, then he's going to be back. Like, there's no confidence building with, especially with how they've treated the whole situation in terms of press conferences. Like, the Chiefs can say, hey, we like Juan, but he's not as good as we want him to be right now. Like, that's not going to build up any confidence at all. Mm-hmm. So I think it needed to be done for Juan Thornhill, and it needed to be done for the Chiefs' defense.
I would literally rather see Armani Watts playing the deep safety roles that we've seen Sorensen get most burnt on. The crazy thing is, like, and then this, maybe you and I are both too big of contrarians or for whatever reason, but I think that putting Dan Sorensen back in that sort of, like, light weak side linebacker role, or maybe he's doing some coverage in the flat or whatever, like, playing the box safety, however you want to describe it. Whenever I talked to him before the season, he straight up said weak side linebacker, which I was sort of surprised by, but let's be able to talk about it in the rooms. I think there might even be a way, if Spags wants to get more aggressive with the blitzes, which I think would make a lot of sense, using Sorensen there would be fine with me. There are places where it makes sense for him to be on the field, I think, but it's just not where they've been putting him. And so, I mean, I just can't imagine that. I mean, I shouldn't say can't imagine. I could not rationalize him being put in a similar situation to where he was last week, even against Washington here. It just seems like also a good time to test Juan Thornhill. Say, hey, you get Taylor Heinicke and maybe not even Terry McLaurin. Like, just you go be free safety. Go be the guy that you've been working on trying to become again since your injury or whatever. And let's see against Washington. Because if it is possible for it to be worse than it was last Sunday, then doing it against Washington, still the offense can still have a chance to bail you out. And I don't think it really can be worse. And I also definitely don't think it will be worse.
Yeah, and there's a double-edged sword, I think, with Dan Sorensen as a let's try that again. Dan Sorensen as a deep safety. People, when they say he's better when the play is in front of them, that's like a backhanded compliment for he's not athletic enough. And people used it for Nick Bolton a lot heading into the draft and said, you know, he's at his best when he can react and play downhill. And that screams, don't put him in coverage. Don't have him getting depth as a linebacker. You know, getting depth is cool, but then he has more ground to cover. Like, it's a tough spot to be in. So I get the whole Sorensen processes quicker than some other guys. So maybe being a deep safety allows him to get going downhill. But also, if he's your last line of defense, he's not stopping anybody. Yeah. Like, if the corner gets beat, Dan Sorensen has not enough range to even come close. So get him closer to the line of scrimmage where he can, you know, get going downhill and make a play against the run, or play in some exotic blitz packages that Spags has drawn up, or run out in the flat and say, maybe, you know, I'm a little bit quicker than Nick Bolton, I guess. Maybe I'm a little bit better of a tackler than Ben Neiman, which even this year he's been one of the worst tacklers, if not the worst in the league. So I think Sorensen is, he still has certain places, like you said, certain situations where it's worthy of being a viable player for the Chiefs, but being a deep safety just is not his cup of tea. And he's been able to get by a little bit in the past, but now that Thornhill is hopefully going to be back out there, Sorensen snaps will go down and maybe the quality of those will go up.
On the, like, the cliche there, who isn't better with the play in front of them? Like, I don't think Ed Reed was better when the play was behind him, right? Like, moving forward is easier than moving backward for everybody, right?
Yeah, and it's so hard. I think corner is unbelievably difficult because you literally have to backpedal and run as fast as the receivers are running forward. And I know Dan Sorensen, obviously, he's not at the line of scrimmage as a deep safety, so he doesn't have to backpedal quite as fast. Kind of a tangent off of that, the Chiefs run like this bail technique with some of their corners. I've seen Mike Hughes run it quite a bit, where they'll line up like they're going to press at the line of scrimmage, and as soon as the ball is snapped, they literally bail. And that's why it's called that. He will run as fast as he can to get some depth and coverage. But then you can get beat closer to the line of scrimmage on, like, slants, outs, and stuff like that. So the Chiefs, man, part of this might be just asking a little bit too much of guys who didn't pick up the system. And I don't know who that would be. I know the Chiefs didn't make a ton of changes. But, you know, when you have a few different guys playing in the secondary, it's not like Hughes is a seasoned veteran or anything, or even DeAndre Baker. You have some injuries mixed in. Like, it's not like the Chiefs said, let's run it back on defense and then have had perfect health. Like, there are many reasons to believe it's going to get better, but maybe Spag simplifying it, and like you said, just saying, just run a blitz. You know, go put pressure on the quarterback, because clearly their front four can't do that. There are ways for them to get better, I think.
Blake wants an offensive question. I'm good with that. I'm tired of talking about this defense. What you got, Blake?
I was wondering if maybe you two both, or maybe just Jordan has seen it, or maybe I'm crazy out here, but
yeah,
it seems to me that Pro Football Focus ratings aside for this offensive line, what they grade out to be is whatever. But what I saw the last two games, in my opinion, is I just feel like, even though he's not necessarily getting touched, I feel like Patrick's movement has been all over the place and not so pocket friendly. Now, we know that he can throw on the run, and we know that he likes to get out and kind of make things happen, but it just seems to me that he's playing with almost tension on the line. And again, they've kept guys off him pretty well, but I want to know if you guys are kind of seeing the same thing, and is that just the way that this offense is going to move, or is there some worries there that Patrick is maybe making look better because he is as mobile as he is?
I got an hour of radio after this, Jordan, still, so you take that one.
I hate speculating, and I hate trying to get in the mind of the best quarterback in the league, but I'm going to say it. I think he tells you who he trusts and who he doesn't trust without even saying it. His actions speak louder than going into the post-game pressers and saying, you know, I think Mecole Hardman's going to step up. I think DeMarcus Robinson's going to make plays. I think the line has been great. You know, he goes out in the game. He will check Tyreek Hill. He will check Travis Kelce. He'll check Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Then he'll circle back. Then sometimes he'll say, okay, let's look and see what Mecole or Robinson are doing. Like, I think Patrick Mahomes has always had a very unorthodox way of navigating the pocket. And I think that with guys who aren't used to that, like, it's not Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz anymore. It's two brand new guys who had one off season to get used to it. Granted, Niang, I guess, did have more time, but as a starter, being thrown into the fire, and they've had bad moments, sure, but overall the line has been good, like Blake said. I think it's definitely valid. His pocket presence has been a problem for who knows how long. He used to take too deep of drops. Then I forget which game it was. It might have been the Philly game earlier in the year. He was stepping up, but he was stepping up too far. Like, he was literally almost running into his lineman. So I think it's not the Chiefs are trying to coach the fun out of Patrick Mahomes thing, because he still is a very fun player and still gets out of the pocket. But he bailed out of some very solid pockets against Buffalo. He feels like phantom pressure. He doesn't know which angles to take. It's like he's still getting a read for where his offensive linemen are going to be. They're still getting a read for how deep in the pocket is he dropping. And it's ironic because, like, heading into the year, these were things that everyone brought up as it's going to take maybe an entire season for this line to gel. The line's playing well as a group, and now, you know, no one's bringing that up. So that's a very good question. I think that there's definitely some merit to it. And Mahomes, like, I know that it's very hard to ever criticize him because he's so dang good, but he definitely has to be better in several aspects of the game.
I asked Andy Heck about the Chiefs offensive line coach about that on Thursday, and he basically said, like, about the specifics of, hey, you know, Mahomes talked a ton about the communication with the tackles and learning them versus having Fisher and Schwartz here. And Heck said, I mean, pretty much we're just kind of, you know, everyone knows the horseshoe of a pocket, and the tackles set the width of the pocket, and we kind of coach all of our guys to do that regardless, which I thought was kind of interesting because it sort of minimized the differences between having Fisher and Schwartz and then having Brown and Niang, which even Mahomes had sort of, and even to some extent Andy Reid had even kind of acknowledged. So I thought that was sort of interesting. Maybe he just didn't want to, you know, speak on behalf of any of them in terms of, like, the communication side of things. But I think you're right that the one thing of in Mahomes' game that has shown up a couple times as a negative in different ways throughout his career has been has been the way that he will occasionally end up in the pocket over adjusting for something or overcompensating for something, which doesn't mean that he's been bad in the pocket or like the idea that he needs to do more from the pocket and not bail so often, I think is a silly kind of like over exaggeration of not a real problem. What is a problem though is looking uncomfortable there. And that was the thing against Buffalo. That's been the thing I think this year, where it just seems like you use the word confidence and trust in his guys. It does seem like there's still a decent amount of work still being done there because he hasn't looked really comfortable in a pocket since, I don't know, like week four last year, maybe?
Yeah, and he's had, you know, like when he had the ankle injury in 2019 or whenever that was, clearly affected him. Like being a quarterback, you have to be mentally tough, but I don't really care what people say. Patrick Mahomes is a normal person, just like you and me. You know, he's been through some stuff. He went through the Super Bowl. I'm not trying to say he has, like, PTSD from it or anything, but it's going to take a while. And the Chiefs did not return every player. They did not hashtag run it back this season. There are significant tangible changes being made to the team that were made to the team. It's the width of the pocket definitely is valid. I think Connor Christopherson and I were chatting with one of Lucas Niang's trainers on Twitter one day, and we were talking about the depth of the pocket. And he was like, the Chiefs train these guys to go a certain amount, like 9 yards, 7 yards, whatever it was. Patrick Mahomes, man, he can have some where he drops like 12 yards.
Yeah.
And I don't care who your tackles are. Like in the Super Bowl against the 49ers, Wasp, he dropped that far. Had the 49ers not run a stunt with Bosa and Buckner, whoever was alongside Bosa, they would have got to Mahomes. Like he barely had enough time and he got lucky. It doesn't matter how good your tackles are. If you give an edge rusher a straight line to the quarterback, he's going to eventually get there if he's fast. So Mahomes has to be better. The tackles do have to be better. I don't think Orlando Brown's been as good as advertised. But, you know, it's a long season. He's in it for the long haul. I do think the Chiefs will pay him. So moral of the story with the offense and the defense, I think, is although the Chiefs came into the year, you know, with Super Bowl expectations, they still can get there. But we're a third, less than a third of the way through a pretty long NFL season.
What's your feel on tomorrow? We've spent most of this week talking about the Chiefs' big picture. Even on Thursday, it was the most former game-heavy press conference I can ever remember being at on a Thursday, because usually by that point, you're looking ahead and asking questions about whoever is next. But obviously, it's been a tough start. They got crushed by a very good team, and now they're going up against a team that nobody thinks is particularly excellent. Sounds like Terry McLaurin may not play. Washington has a whole bunch of injuries of their own, but no Chris Jones, no Charvarius Ward. Anthony Hitchens and Tyreek Hill are both questionable along... who else? Somebody else was questionable also, I think, right? I wrote the story. You would think that I would remember what I wrote down. That doesn't matter. Tooney, yeah, because he broke his hand. And honestly, I'm not even upset for forgetting he was questionable, because it seems to me like he's not going to miss a snap after breaking his hand early in the game on Sunday. He's a cyborg. But anyway, all of that being said, is there anything that makes you nervous? Is there anything that you feel confident about going into tomorrow's game?
I think defensively for Washington, like offensively, I don't think they're going to be able to do too much. If they carve up the Chiefs defense, then, you know, my hand's going to inch closer and closer to the panic button. Mm-hmm. I think my pick's 31-17. I'm just going to let that out. I don't think Washington's going to have a great game. I know Curtis Samuel's out. Terry McLaurin might be out. I believe they're missing Shirt and Cosme, so that's the right side of their starting offensive line. But defensively, their front four, and sometimes they even run a front five. Like, they're a very deep defense. Chase Young, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, Montez Sweat. Man, as good as any team in the NFL. And it's weird because Washington last year had, like, a top five defense. Mm-hmm. And even I was, like, they're a quarterback away from being a legitimate problem. Now the defense is a legitimate problem, but in a bad way. Like, they're a bottom five unit this year. The Chiefs defense obviously makes them look like gangbusters or whatever. But, you know, I think Washington can generate a pretty good deal of pressure with just rushing four. or even if they go to five, whatever they do, it's going to be tough for the Chiefs to handle. And if the offensive line slips a little bit, if Niang lets someone off the edge, if Brown struggles, if Tooney can't really get through the game well with that hand, which I just can't imagine. Like, having a club on your hand when you're an offensive lineman and your hand is literally fractured. Like, I hashtag built different hockey football. You know, it's insane. But if the Chiefs offensive line brings their A game or even close to it, like A-minus, B-plus, it's not going to be crazy. But we just talked about Mahomes and kind of the phantom pressure and lackluster pocket navigation. That's going to be the case if the line starts off on a bad note against a really talented front for Washington.
Yeah, you kind of touched on it, but I think, like, if this is a game where the defense can't stabilize, it's going to be really hard to try to stay anything resembling optimistic.
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
Blake, did you have one more for Jordan? You good? All right, well, we'll let you go on that one then, Jordan. You can read his work at arrowheadreport.com. You can follow him on Twitter at footnoted. You can listen to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast. Got an episode up yesterday previewing the game a little bit more. Who all was with you on Friday? Was it Sam on Friday?
Yeah, I had Sam Hayes. He does some stuff with PFF and does really good work at Arrowhead Report. So it was fun to chat with him, preview the game a little bit, and kind of like this. We eased people's nerves about the Chiefs and said, you know, hey, there's a lot that needs to be done, but I think if any team has earned the benefit of the doubt, it's probably this one.
I hope they are able to reward that kind of optimism. It's also kind of funny, though, because I don't know how good, like, if they win this game 40-0, maybe people will chill. But if they win even whatever, 31-17, like, and you go, all right, well, that doesn't make me feel a whole lot better about whenever they have to play the Chargers again. So, yeah, that's kind of a funny double-edged sword, and we'll certainly not have any lack of things to talk about where we go from here. Thank you, Jordan.
Yep, thanks, Josh.
Again, at footnoted on Twitter, arrowheadreport.com, the Rough and the Kicker Chiefs podcast. I want to talk about a couple of things that that Jordan touched on there. We'll do that whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Josh is currently puzzled and baffled by who is Mr. Stinky Feet. You heard in that last commercial brought to you by Pamela.
Yeah, there was just the ad there promoting something that included Mr. Stinky Feet.
Josh gave me this look like, who is this man? Who is this legend?
Magnificent man with a wonderful name. I just was not...
So
I was not aware of Mr. Stinky Feet's extensive discography.
This brings us back to kind of the homeschooling debate,
sure,
or, like, you know, conversation that we had to open the show in our, you know, in the 11 o'clock hour, because
sure,
Mr. Stinky Feet, for anybody, pretty much anybody, I guess, who wasn't homeschooled.
Anyone with culture.
Yeah. Uncultured swine.
Yeah.
Mr. Stinky Feet was the man, and he sang the song. Stinky Feet. Stinky, maybe I'll have to pull it up, see if we can find it. But basically, he just entertained school. Like, he's somebody who would go around to schools and different things that would sing stupid, silly kid songs.
Did he ever come to your school?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have one question for you.
I didn't. Go ahead.
What did his feet smell like?
They were super stinky.
Gross.
He also had no socks or shoes on. That's why they're so smelly. Yeah, pretty sure he's a hippie, but stinky feet.
This picture on his Facebook, he is wearing shoes and socks, and so that's pretty disappointing. I feel like you just gotta, again, no shade to Mr. Stinky Feet. I'm just not aware of his, again, his extensive work. I'm currently seeing a lot of pictures of him jumping in the air, but also having shoes on.
I'm pretty sure he's a multi-platinum recording artist.
I just think that there's some false advertising here if his feet aren't stinky and if we can't see them.
On the cover of this album, his shoes are off, and there is the little squiggly lines that would indicate aroma exuding from the shoes while he is barefoot. His real name is Jim Cosgrove. I'm not going to lie.
I
want to know how old Jim is, because if I saw him as a kid, when I was probably eight, so that was about 18 years ago.
I don't like seeing people's feet.
Is that what does it for you? It's just
I don't ever want anyone ever to touch my feet, and I don't even want to. You took your socks off? Why are your feet so dark at the bottom?
Wait, what?
Have you washed your feet lately? It looks like you've been shuffling.
I've been tanning.
No,
tanning the bottom of
dirty.
My foot.
No, it looks like dirt.
No.
Why did you take your socks off?
Because I had to do what you wouldn't expect.
You're right. You got me. I was not ready for it. I just don't. Feet are just kind of gross. And I know. Oh, look, I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum or anything. Like, I understand that for some people,
I think gross feet are gross. I think it's possible to have a non-gross foot. Mainly it has to do, I think, with your toenails. Like, toenails can be gunky and nasty, and that, I think, is what makes the rest of your foot, it just turns the whole foot thing around. I'm not a foot guy. That's not my thing.
It sounds like, yeah,
no. But I
now
think
don't protest too much, good sir.
To say feet are gross, I'm like, well, it depends.
But for me, it doesn't really, like, you know, it can be Bilbo Baggins or Quick. Say somebody who you think has good feet. I'm not going to do it. Make you do it.
I was going to say, I think that was a trick question, because I don't have somebody off the top of my head. But
fine.
If I did, you would have been like, see, I knew it.
Yeah, that is absolutely what I was going to do. You could take Bilbo Baggins. You could take whoever you think has, you know, the most.
Cinderella
feet. Oh, man, don't Google
that.
It's
all about the foot.
Don't Google that. I see what you're doing there, but I would say that Googling that would be a thing that I would not suggest anybody do. Or I bet the search term would start auto-populating a lot sooner than you'd expect. There's going to be something gross. It's the internet, man. There just would be. But sure, man, whatever. You could have a perfect foot for a glass slipper, or you can literally be a hobbit. And either way, I'm just not particularly interested. Wow, Florida just hit a Hail Mary to end the half against LSU, and they're
nice.
Down big. That was beautiful. Holy smokes.
Do we have any updates on the
looks like he got,
thrashing in Columbia?
Got his foot in bounds. Sorry. No, you know, it went to halftime. I saw Mizzou was letting the clock run out. I believe it's 28-7. It is 28-7. You know, Mizzou and A&M tied in the second quarter. 7-7 there. First quarter is
small
not
wins,
helping.
Small victories.
Wow, this is a great catch by this Florida dude.
Was it one or two?
Just one. And they're in the shoes. That I'm not saying that, you know, I just don't like to see feet. And so you doing what
you
did to me. And
you
then,
don't own a pair of flip-flops, do you?
I do, actually. I do. I don't mind. I'm not repulsed by my own feet. I just don't want anybody else to, like, touch them.
Well, I mean, that I feel like that's understandable. Do you
like,
get,
a lot of people like a foot massage. And, like, I would just pass on that. If someone was like, hey, here's an all-inclusive day at the spa,
so,
and it includes a foot massage, I'd be like, cool, can I just get it without that? It's like ordering a sandwich without tomato. Like, I'll have the turkey club, no tomato, and the massage, no feet.
Huh. So, quick story.
I think. I don't know. I'm not how to.
My girlfriend, Miss Peyton Windsor, shout out to Peyton.
First name, last name. See,
yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was wanted to get pedicures the other day. And so I said, you know what? That sounds like it'd be a fun time.
Sure.
You know what? I'll take
Treat
care
yourself.
Of, I'll take care of my feet, too.
Treat make yourself. Them. Absolutely.
So I went, and I found out I am extremely ticklish.
Oh, that's another thing,
and
man.
And it was kind of not as relaxing
yeah.
when I'm gripping the chair, trying not to kick this poor woman in the face
yeah.
who's touching my feet, because
yeah.
I realize I am so squeamish and, like, ticklish that
yeah.
it was like, okay, this is, like, cool with the massage, with the water jet massage thing that you
uh-huh.
were doing, but now you got the sugar scrub on it, and I'm like, I don't want to break your nose. I really don't.
Yeah, that would be
but
really
I'm
unpleasant.
Picky, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, you gotta... I mean, look, I went to the hospital and they had to strap me to the bed. They need to just have some. They need to have some restraint straps for your feet, so you just they can just strap your feet to the chair and then just give you the full petty.
She's already texting me, laughing about our foot conversation.
Wow. So you guys are the state in the relationship where she still listens whenever you're on the radio?
Oh, she's probably one of my biggest supporters besides my family. I mean, she listens as much as she can.
That'll stop.
She said, all right, Blake, shut up.
How long have you guys been together?
Almost 3 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah, give it time.
Oh, yeah?
You're 4 years, 5 years, stop listening.
So she just doesn't listen to you anymore, huh?
I mean, right now she's doing something. I think she's... like a lunch with her family, but it's, you know.
Yeah, that's what she told you.
I don't, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a great point. She's probably, probably listening to some other talk radio station.
You know what's gone bad when they deprogram 810 from their radio.
It's not even there for appearances anymore. That's funny.
They've given up.
That's good. I need you to give me a loose idea of how much time we have to stretch out in this segment, because I got some stuff, I know you've got some stuff to do, and I got some stuff to talk about if we want to do some quick math. Let me know what I got to work with here, because I do want to actually follow up.
Got about 7 minutes.
Excellent. Well, then why don't you handle whatever you need to handle? I will talk about Dave Merritt for a second, because Chiefs presser yesterday were interesting, and honestly, I thought about just playing Dave Merritt's entire press conference. Blake is currently putting his shoes back on. Stupid. Dave Merritt and Sam Madison are the Chiefs defensive backs coaches. Their titles are slightly different, whatever. But they both work with the defensive backs. And Dave Merritt, he's defensive backs. Madison is defensive backs / cornerbacks, I think. Merritt seems like he does... They both work with the corners and the safeties a little bit. Defensive backs coaches. So I really thought about playing Dave Merritt's entire press conference because it was about as interesting as it gets in terms of actually learning something at a presser. And I say it that way with sort of a little bit of cynicism perhaps in my voice, because Andy Reid. And then to a lesser extent, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, and to a lesser extent, Steve Spagnuolo, they are not doing press conferences to teach us anything, right? In fact, like if you're a coach running a press conference, one of your goals is to not tell anybody too much of anything. Because not only are, you know, the media listening and then, you know, fans are listening and everything, but also opposing teams are going to get to that eventually. So you don't want to give too much away, so I understand that. But I also think that coaches who are really about not giving away too much occasionally, I don't know, miss opportunities to explain some things or make everybody smarter, which, again, is not their job. Their job is to win football games, and the best way to do that would be to do no media availability at all, because you don't want to give up anything, I guess. But there are these times when you get coaches who can actually put some things in context, who are willing to teach you something, who can explain something in a way that maybe you've not heard before. And so Merritt did that on Thursday. He spent basically his entire press conference, and honestly, I might even play it after we talk to Joe next segment here, or at least I'll grab a couple of clips of it because it's really good stuff. But he spent basically his entire press conference. I think the first question was sort of like, hey, what do you guys need to work on? And then the rest of the presser was about eye discipline. Now, he went on to say, look, here are like a few things that came up in different answers. Said, whenever we tell our corners this, don't look at their head, don't look at their shoulders. That's always shimmying around. Don't look at their feet. You know, you can make these false steps and stuff. Watch the hips of the receiver. And when you're doing that, he said, this is almost verbatim. Don't be looking around at something else. Don't be looking down the field. Don't be looking at a bird or a butterfly, which are a couple of things also that, again, on that long touchdown to Dawson Knox, Dan Sorensen's eyes were in the wrong spot because Knox got by him and he lost him. Don't be looking around at two or three different things. He says this verbatim as well. If you're trying to chase two rabbits, you're going to catch zero of them. So pick your target, stay disciplined, keep your eyes on the receiver's hips, and stay there. Now, he also said, look, there's a difference between what my mama gave me and what your mama gave you. And that, I think, is him talking about, look, if you're a receiver, you know, like Rashad Fenton, I think might be the shortest of the Chiefs' regular corners at this point. And in practice, if Rashad Fenton's played very well, by the way. I do not mean to sideswipe Rashad Fenton. I'm a big Rashad Fenton fan. I've been a Rashad Fenton fan since they drafted him. There's my Rashad Fenton weird gatekeeping slash credentials. But if Rashad Fenton lines up against Josh Gordon in practice, Josh Gordon has physical traits that Rashad Fenton is going to have a hard time just sort of techniquing out of that play. It's not impossible. Depends on where the throw is and everything. But, you know, that's... Jody Fortson's a good red zone target because of his size and everything else that he can do. But, like, that's sort of, you know, trait 1A. Tyreek Hill's got speed that the best corners in the league are going to have trouble with. I digress. But with that being a thing that he is seeing a problem with, being Dave Merritt, he also said, and I think he really genuinely showed this over the course of the press conference, he said and showed that he thinks that is easily the biggest issue the cornerbacks are currently having. Before we get to the result of that, I think that's reasonable, and I think that's probably a good sign. Because that's not an issue of athleticism or an issue of execution. I mean, it's an execution thing, but like a specific one. It's not an issue of, again, talent or of ability, but it's a question of being able to do this one specific thing better. So he also says a little bit later that he thinks that it's something that can also be fixed pretty quickly. Now, I tweeted that out, and there were plenty of people who responded something along the lines of, like, so it's week 5. What is it going to take to fix that? And I think that's multifaceted, because on one side, I would say 5 weeks isn't really that much time in the grand scheme of an NFL season in terms of, like, fixing a problem. But also, if it's something that you're honed in on, and maybe they weren't honed in on it right away, I don't know, there's room to improve on that relatively quickly. Like, if you're zeroing in on day after day after day after day in practice, you guys are playing fine except for this particular thing that you can fix not by getting faster or taller or stronger, but by keeping your eyes where they're supposed to be and not getting distracted. Another element of that, though, I think goes back to a word that we use with Patrick Mahomes in the offensive line. I think there are also trust issues there around the rest of the defense. You know, when your eyes, I imagine, really start drifting, whenever you're not sure that the guy to your left or right or in front or behind you is going to do their part of the job on that play. If you are Tyrann Mathieu, and you're afraid that Mike Hughes is not going to keep his eyes on his receiver, then now all of a sudden Tyrann Mathieu, instead of watching the underneath middle stuff, is starting to worry about the guy that's running straight past Mike Hughes right now. Well, so then now Mathieu starts to, maybe he takes one step to go try to help Hughes out. This is a totally fictional scenario, by the way. And then all of a sudden underneath, or a zone that Mathieu was supposed to be keeping an eye on, is suddenly wide open. In fact, I think that's the better comparison on that example is probably to go back to that play against the Bills, where I think it was Hitchens and Bolton who literally had their backs to a wide open, it was either Zach Moss or Devin Singletary, in the middle of the field. Somebody wasn't doing their job, but I think at least two or three other guys were probably trying to accommodate for that, and then everyone was sort of improperly doing their job. It's an interesting dynamic and one that I'm very interested to see if the Chiefs start to solve as this season goes on. Again, they can only prove so much against Washington in one game, but you got to take it one game at a time, and hopefully tomorrow things look a little bit better. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Blake Schneider's on the other side of the glass. We'll take a break here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joe Wiz will join us next to break down this weekend's NFL action. We'll preview the week with him next.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.